1 Samuel 17 this evening. 1 Samuel 17. I want to ask you to do something when church is over tonight. I want to ask you to come forward, pick up one of these poinsettias, take one of these figurines, one of the figurines out by the tree in the foyer, and I want to move them over here to these closets that are right here in the breezeway next to the elevator. The reason for that is because we had three people say they could come on Tuesday to help take decorations down. And this will save a whole lot of walking on Tuesday if I can get each of you to come by and get just one little poinsettia or one little statue. And I guess I should say that if you don't walk real well, get the poinsettia. They're easier to replace. All right? So I'll ask you young people to kind of lead the pack with that. And I'd appreciate that greatly. Now, I hate to even tell you this, because I know you think that I'm going to be lying about it. But I'm really not expecting to be long tonight. And I'll tell you why. I tried twice to print my sermon notes out, and the copier didn't work. It said that it was going to the copier. It didn't work. I went down there, nothing. And so, if you've ever seen my handwriting, you know that it's hard to read. It's hard for me to read. And so, there's just a few little thoughts right here on this little yellow piece of paper. And I hope tonight that you will enjoy the message out of 1 Samuel chapter 17. The title of the message is The Baddest Man in Philistia. And when I say that, I can't help but think of some secular times in my life when I was listening to Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. And hearing the laughs, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right. He was the baddest man in the whole downtown, you know. And so I'm going to be talking tonight about the baddest man in Philistia. And of course, you know who that is. That's the big man named Goliath. And we're going to look at him a little bit this evening. I thought about this afternoon many years ago. Back when I was a youth guy, we had a big banquet one year, and we invited some parents to come to it along with some folks in the youth group, and we had about 120 people that were at the perimeter north end over off of Buford Highway. And I mean, it was a decked out night. I mean, I told the teenagers, we're going to put on the dog, all right? I mean, we all had coach ties. Ladies had kind of formal type dresses, and I mean, it was a big deal. And so we had a big crowd. Well, part of the entertainment for the evening, I had one of the dads dress up as a boxer. And he had the boxing gloves on. He's bouncing around. He's doing all this stuff. And the name of the boxer was Rocky the Kid Canvasback. Every fight he'd ever been into, he ended up on his back on the canvas mat. And so we were interviewing him, and we would say something like this: "Hey, Rock, how many fights have you had?" He said, "I've had 47. "How many have you lost?" He said, "47. "So, well, why do you keep boxing?" He said, "It's just kind of in my blood." He said, "And I see my blood all the time when I'm boxing." He said, "Well," he said, if you had any advice, whenever it comes to fighting, especially a big one, you know, when you're fighting a big guy, what's the advice?" He said, "Remember this," he said, the bigger they are, the harder they hit." You know, and you're thinking, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Oh, no, not with Rocky the Kid Canvasback. The bigger they are, the harder they hit. Well, tonight we're going to look at the baddest man in Philistia. Look with me, beginning in verse 4. The first thing that I want you to see is I want you to see the challenger, all right? And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines. In other words, he was the guy. Anytime they had had any intramural sports over in the Philistine cities, this guy was always the one that came out on top. Well, his name was Goliath, and he was of Gath. His height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, in ancient times, people would measure a cubit different ways. Sometimes you would have people, and if we were translating it into English, we would say sometimes a cubit is about 18 inches. Other times, other people would say, no, a cubit's 21 inches. Well, if we go with the smaller number, about 18 inches, Goliath is somewhere around 9 foot 6 to 9 foot 9 inches tall. That's pretty big. Years ago in the NBA, there was a man named Wilt Chamberlain. He was 7 foot 1. He was the first guy, and I guess the only guy that I can remember. I don't know anybody that's come close to this. But he scored 100 points in a basketball game because everybody else was like a boy against him. He's 7 foot one. Well, just a few short years ago, there was a big old guy that was about 7 foot one, and he came from LSU. His name was Shaquille O'Neal. They called him Shaq. He was big as a Shaq. I mean, he was huge. Well, those guys would be 2 feet, at least 5 inches shorter than this guy. Now, the biggest man that I have ever seen in my own life, with my own eyeballs, happened several years ago when Brother Don and I were at a funeral in Marietta. If you're from Marietta, you don't pronounce it Marietta, it's Mayretta. But we were in Marietta, and we had stopped after the funeral at a Sonny's barbecue. And there were 3 guys that came in, and the first 2 guys came in, and they were big. I mean, they had to be 6'5", 6'6", and I mean, they were like wide. But they weren't wide like I'm wide. They had shoulders like this and waist like this. And I told Brother Don, I said, those dudes are big. And about that time, their buddy come in. He dwarfed them. They sat at a booth. And I'm talking about there was 2 giants and 2 baby Hueys sitting there. The big guy had to be 6'9", 6'10". And I mean, he was as wide as that booth. And I thought, that's the biggest guy I've ever seen in my life. Goliath dwarfs that guy. I mean, he dwarfs him. And so, we look at the size of this guy. At least, at a minimum, 9'6". Well, he has a helmet of brass upon his head. And they say that a Philistine helmet basically had a little flare across the top of it made out of feathers. And so you can imagine a helmet as big as a beach ball, right? His head had a helmet of brass on it. He was armed, in other words, here in his chest. He had a coat of mail. Now that didn't mean he had paper envelopes, right? A coat of mail was little pieces of metal that were layered together. Think of scales on a fish. That's what a coat of mail looked like, and it would cover all of the vital organs from the neck down basically to the loin area. And so he had this huge coat of mail, and the Bible says that it was 5,000 shekels of brass.
Again, according to the people that you read, it weighed a minimum of 125 pounds up to 166 pounds. Now, can you imagine having to carry that much weight? But when you're a champion, when you're strong like that, that's like you and I going and grabbing a 15-pound weight and just throwing it around wherever you want to throw it to. I mean, he was just a man's man. So he's got this huge coat of mail on. Well, verse 6, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs. Now, what is a greave? All right, how many of you have ever had a kid that played soccer? Thank God a few of you, all right? All right? You know, whenever I was growing up, that was a communist conspiracy. Football was the deal, all right? But if you've ever seen a soccer player, you know that one of the things they do is they have shin guards, all right? Well, visualize a metal shin guard that would be formed to the front of the legs, and it would go all the way down to the top of the feet. It was to protect the legs from blows with a sword. Oh, not only that, if a person had greaves on, they could be running through a forest, and if they hit briars or anything like that, it would not bring blood. It was a protection, and so he had greaves of brass that was upon his legs. Well, not only that, there was a target of brass between his shoulders. So visualize this. On his back, right back here, there's a huge circular piece of brass to protect him from being shot in the back with some type of arrow, and it would be held on the front by having a crisscrossed type of security system. Well, he would take inside of that brass target on his shoulders. In verse 7, there was a staff. It was a spear. Some people would say that the spear here in the Hebrew was a javelin. I have no idea. I know there's a little difference between a spear and a javelin. A javelin is about 5 or 6 feet, and a spear can be about 10 feet. And so you've got this staff of his spear, but we do know that it was like a weaver's beam. Now, what does that mean? That means that it was thick, all right? And so he's got this target of brass that's on his back, and he's able to take that spear, that spear that's as big as a weaver's beam, and he's able to stick it in the back, and he's able to carry it that way. So he's going to have a sword, he's going to have a spear. But then I want you to notice this, that head on that spear, it weighed 600 shekels of iron. You say, how much was that? That's about 17 pounds. Now you think about that. You're out in the country. You're on some battlefield somewhere, and all of a sudden you look down and you go, you know what? I think that's an arrowhead right there. And you pick that thing up, and it's like 2 ounces. And you're thinking, man, I got a treasure right here. And you just have visions of cowboys and Indians, and man, these Indians had this little arrowhead stuck on the end of a piece of wood. Man, he's shooting that thing. And you think that's just I got an arrowhead. Well, imagine if you had one that was 17 pounds. Imagine trying to throw that thing and it weighs 17 pounds. Now, when I was in junior high school, for some reason, the PE coach thought that we needed to try to throw a shot put. And it was a little brown ball, weighed probably about 10 pounds. Of all the boys in the junior high that I went to, I don't think any of them threw it more than 10 feet. I mean, you got that thing and you're turning around and you're pushing it like you're an Olympic athlete. And you push that thing and what does it do? It goes, soup, boom. But he's got this spear and the head of it is 7. If it didn't go through you, it's going to kill you from the thud if it hits you. And so he is decked out. But then I want you to see something else that he's got. Not only did he have a 17-pound head on this weaver's beam of a spear, but he had one bearing a shield that went before him. He didn't even carry his own shield. He had some guy that was trusted, and he had a 9-foot shield, and his job was to keep Goliath from getting hit with enemy fire. Now, this guy had to be probably pretty big himself. I mean, after all, he was from Philistia. And in those 5 Philistine cities, they were growing them big. As a matter of fact, you begin to read, and later on, you'll find when David is an old man, there's a giant from Philistia, and he sees old David, and he goes, yeah, I'm going to kill that king now. He's an old man, and he can't do anything about it. And David's like, I got my sword. I'll get you. And what happens is one of David's men comes, and he kills the giant. You know why that guy could kill a giant? Because he saw his king do it 30 or 40 years earlier. And so you got this guy that is carrying this shield. He's got one job, and that is to keep Goliath from getting hurt. He's the defense. Goliath, with his sword, with his spear, is the offense. And so I want you to see how big that challenger is. Now, ask yourself, have you ever faced anything that horrible? I mean, what is the scaredest that you have ever been when it comes to looking at an enemy? I mean, I've had some bullies that have, you know, scared me before. I can think of 2 in particular when I was in elementary school. I could probably say this tonight because we're not streaming tonight. But one of the guys, his name was Bubba. I won't call his last name in case if he ever got saved and he maybe hears me preach. But I mean, that guy would put the fear of God in you. If you knew he was going home one way, you'd walk home an extra half a mile just so you didn't have to walk next to him. And then one day I thought, I got to quit walking the long way home. I mean, if I got to fight, I guess I'm going to have to. And when he found out that I wouldn't run anymore, he quit picking on me. But I guess the biggest bully was a guy that lived next door to one of my good friends, and his name was Doug. And he was a little bitty guy. And his next door neighbor, I mean, he just wreaked havoc over on Hale Street. I mean, I'll whip your, you know what? I mean, and we weren't any of us saved. I mean, we were using bad language and everything else. And I mean, that went on literally for a couple of years. And he was picking on old Doug one day, who was like the littlest kid on the street. And Doug just went nuts on him. And got him down on the ground and started beating him. And the guy started crying. And everybody's thinking, Doug Williams whipped him? Doug's the littlest guy in town. If he can whip him, everybody else can whip him. So then we started saying, you want some of me? Well, he didn't. He started just walking around, just acting normal after that. Well, all of us have had people that have scared us. Circumstances that have scared us. Maybe you're out in the woods. Something happens. I remember one time I was fishing in the Ogeechee River swamp with my dad and my grandpa. We had run out of fishing bait where I was at. And I was always taught, well, you know, if you need some fishing bait, just turn over a log, you know, find you a caterpillar or something and just use it. Well, I'm 10 years old and I'm thinking, no big deal. Don't have any more worms. I'll find me a worm. So I'm down next to this little lake, and I call it a lake. It really probably was not a third of the size of this room, but the Geechee River swamp had flooded. The waters had receded, and there was out little pockets that fish were in, and so we're just fishing those little lakes all up in those woods. Well, I run out of bait. And my grandpa and my dad are, you know, probably, you know, eighth of a mile away or whatever. And so I go down next to this place. I flip over this log, and underneath that log is a snake. I'm not talking about a little snake. I'm talking about this is a big snake. I mean, it had to be 12 foot long. It was a big one. Somebody says, what kind was it? It don't really matter. I mean, it was, I think it was a cottonmouth water rattler. I mean, it was bad, all right? And I jumped back, and my little 10-year-old heart, it was going poof. Boom, boom. It was beating like crazy. And finally, when I knew I was far enough away from that snake, and I was just about to calm down, I heard something going, and about from here to where you guys are sitting, a wild hog came through and hit that water, and water sprayed everywhere, and right behind that hog was another hog chasing it. And I'm this far from two wild hogs. I thought, I got to get out of these woods. A snake and now two hogs? That's a lot for a 10-year-old boy to digest. I was scared. And you can think of that. Now, let me ask you a question. What giants have you faced? We got some folks tonight that's facing some giants. Gene Emenacker's facing some giants. Tony Pullen's facing some giants. And I can start naming people one after another. We buried Luther today. His mama was sitting on the front row. She's got cancer. There's giants that are out there, folks. Those challengers, they're going to show up. And what we've got to do is we've got to be ready. Because it's not a question if they're coming, it's when they're coming. Let me give you a second thought. I want you to look not only at the challenger, but I want you to look at the challenge. Look with me at verse 8. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel. And he said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle in array? In other words, you're over there, you're entrenched. I thought you were coming to fight. We're here in the valley of Elah. We're on the one side. You're on the other side. Am I not a Philistine? In other words, I'm your enemy. I'm the baddest. Why don't you just come on down and let's get it on? And that's their attitude, or his attitude. And he said, aren't you servants of Saul? One of the things that you'll notice maybe next week or the week after when we get to it, when David begins to describe these people, he doesn't describe them as servants of Saul. He talks about them as servants of God. But this Philistine says, aren't you servants of Saul? I mean, isn't there somebody among you that would be willing to step up and fight? I mean, my people are willing to let me represent us. Don't you have somebody over there that'll represent you? Now just think with me a moment about the people that we have that's sitting on Israel's side. First of all, you got the king. Somebody tell me why he was chosen to be king. Head and shoulders above everybody else in the whole country. He's the obvious choice. Now, he's not 9.5 feet tall, But he's probably 6.5 feet tall. You see, the average Israelite was probably about 5'6" at this time. 5'6". I remember one time I was playing in a charity basketball tournament. I don't know why, I just thought of this now. I had just gotten here to the church. I'd probably only been here for a couple of years. And I had a guy that was a coach over at Forest Hills. He called me up and he said, "Hey, Tommy, I need you to play on a basketball team. It's a charity basketball game, and we're going to play some Atlanta Falcons." And I said, "How many you got on the team?" He said, "Oh, we probably got about 10. I said, "Okay." So I went over. His name was Bruce Ward. Big old guy. He used to play offensive tackle for the San Diego Chargers. Well, now he had gotten saved. He was a coach over at Forest Hills. And I got out on the floor, and there was a linebacker that played for the Falcons. And I want to say the guy's name was Kuykendall. Wasn't there a linebacker named Kuykendall for the Falcons? Okay, somebody's saying yes. Okay. He was big. And he was pushing me all over the place. Referee's not calling anything. And so I'm thinking, you know, 5'10", I mean, he's 6'5". He's 240, and I'm 180 at that time. All right. I'd like to get a hold to him now. And we're out there, and I start pushing him. So he starts complaining to the ref, and I'm thinking, "You big baby, you've been knocking me around now for 2 quarters, and I start pushing back a little bit, and you want to whine." I'm thinking, he could have knocked my head off if he wanted to, as big as he was. And so we've got this Philistine, and I mean, he is just baiting him. "Am I not a Philistine? Don't you hate us? We're going to subdue you. Yeah, you might have got us at Michmash 27 years ago, but baby, that's over now. We got you now." And so he says, "Choose you a man." Saul's the obvious choice, but he doesn't do it. Well, can I tell you something? Saul's not the only guy in that army. 27 years earlier, there was a man that belonged to Saul. It was his boy, Jonathan. And I never really thought about this a whole lot. Jonathan's not dead yet. And so Jonathan, who had that great battle, killed 20 people. Him and one of his, just one servant, killed 20 Philistines going up that muddy bank. You remember the challenge? If he says, "We'll come down to you," we'll take off. If they say, "Come up to us," we'll go up there and God will be with us. They said, "Come on up here if you want us." And 27 years early, Jonathan goes up and 20 of them fall. Bam, bam, bam. Like just, I don't know, leaves in a forest. Where's Jonathan? Saul's not moving. He's in his tent. But Jonathan's not moving either. Is it the fact that over the years, maybe his faith has waned a little bit? And he's going to need something to come along and kind of jack him up? And that something's going to be a young man named David? Well, you got other people that are mighty men. Did Saul not have 600 choice servants that were willing to kind of like be his personal bodyguards? Was there not one of those? Evidently not. And so, you've got this Philistine. And what has he done? For 40 days, 2 times a day, he has walked out and he has defied God. He has defied Saul. And he's defied every one of those soldiers that are over on that bank, on the side of that valley. He's defied every one of them. Well, what's the challenge? If he prevails against me, we'll serve you. But if I prevail against him, then you serve us. And what happens? They're fearful, which brings us to our third point. They're fearful. Look with me at verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed. They were troubled. And they were greatly afraid. Greatly afraid. They were fearful. To keep it with a C, I almost used the word the cowards. But I don't really think they were cowards. I just think they were scared. They were fearful. And sometimes the giants that we face are not always outward. In this case, it was an outward threat. But there are times when there's an inward threat that we have to face as well. They were troubled. They were afraid. So I began to ask myself, why would God place them in this situation? I mean, what would be the purpose? Why does God place you and I in a situation sometime when I mean, we're just scared? And let's face it, you say, I've never been scared in my life. I'm rough and tough and all that stuff. Don't lie. You know, I mean, sometimes, you're a boy, you know, you got to make like that, you know, that nothing ever other makes you scared. You know, I grew up in that era. You know, and when the boys would say, you know, let's go watch a horror movie down at the show. There was sometimes I'd go and there sometimes I wouldn't. If it was Frankenstein, I'd go. You know why I'd go? Because I could outrun him. He couldn't catch me. If it was the mummy, no problem at all. He's wrapped up. He can't run. But if they ever said, let's go to the horror show and let's see Dracula, I wasn't going. Dracula scared me. And if you got any sense, he'd have scared you. You say, why? Because first of all, I wasn't putting no garlic. I didn't know where to buy garlic. I wasn't putting none of that around my neck. But he could turn into a bat, and he could fly. You can't outrun flying. He could turn into a dog. You don't outrun dogs. He could get into a locked room. So you don't go see Dracula because he'll spook you. But in real life, there's some things that happen. As a little boy, I wouldn't go see that. But as a grown man, there's some things that just make me fearful. You know, when something maybe happens to one of your grandkids and you're worried. Or you get the news and, you know, and you think, wow, my husband's got this. My wife's got this. My mama's got this. There's some things that just kind of get to you. So don't make like that you don't ever get scared about anything. Because we all do. But why does God bring that? Because sometimes the battle is the place where growing takes place. Now, how many of you men served in the service here? Raise your hand up. All right. Okay. How many of you went in when you were a teenager? All right. When you went in as a teenager, when you came out, you wasn't a kid no more, were you? You went in as a boy, but you came out a man. The closest thing I've ever experienced to anything like that was football. I mean, that was the closest thing I've ever experienced to military combat. When I signed up for the draft back in 73, Vietnam was closing down. And by the time the Gulf came along, it was an all-volunteer army. So I never served in the military. But those that have served in the military, I can't tell you the number of young men that we've had in this church. And I mean, they come through that youth group and they're baby-faced. And they come out and there's a difference. We had an old boy. Him and his sister used to live in Snellville, right next door to Joey and Alicia Cherry, old J.D. Hughes. And old J.D., I mean, he had earrings when people didn't have earrings. Boys, all right? I mean, that boy was forever getting in some kind of trouble. He just liked it. He ended up going to the Marines. I think he got tired of his mom and daddy telling him what to do. So he decided to join the Marines. A year or two later, one Sunday morning, this young man walks in Marine dress blues, and it's J.D. And you get to talking to him, and it's, "Yes, sir. I'm doing good, sir. It's good to be home, sir. Everything, sir." I'm not that much older than him, but he's, "Yes, sir." You know, that young man, he went on to West Point. You say, "How do you know that?" I wrote him letters of recommendation. He ended up being a part of the guard over at the Egyptian embassy over in the Middle East. Old J.D., when he went in the Marine Corps, it took a boy and made a man out of him. One of the finest young men that we've had in this church. Been a blessing to us. Every time we hear from him, it's such a blessing. God allows us to go through battles to grow us. Not only that, but I believe that when we have victories, I believe that it gives us confidence in God for the next one. You know, when Doug Williams whipped that bully, it gave the rest of us confidence that, hey, we do it too. He better not mess with us. When you play ball and you beat a good team, you think, well, if we beat them, we can beat somebody else. There's something about the confidence that builds. And what you're going to see in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see what it does for Israel when their champion, that they just think this is some punk little kid that can't do a single thing. And all of a sudden, God uses him, and all of a sudden they're going to be going, wow! If God can use a 16 or a 17-year-old boy, maybe he can use the rest of us. Let's go get him. And so, victory gives us confidence. And then the last thing is this. We need to remember that giants don't leave on their own. Now let that sink in. Giants don't leave on their own. When they first entrenched, not much was happening. They would look, everybody's just kind of walking around. Nobody's walking down to the floor of the valley. I mean, that's where the battles took place. Nobody's down there. But then one morning, a few mornings after they had been there, they noticed there was a big figure, and that figure began to move down. Then as the sun came across those mountains, they saw that it was a big, big man. And then he began to thunder. "Why have you come to set the battle in array? You come to fight? Am I not a Philistine? Send you a champion down here and let me and him fight." No takers. They're scared. That afternoon, the watcher says, Same guy's coming back. Listen to what he's saying. He's saying the same thing he said this morning. 40 days in a row. Two times a day. That bully wasn't going anywhere. That giant was not leaving without help. And in the next week or two, he's going to get some help. Let's stand together. Now, Father, I want to thank you that when we look